Say dummy copy.
Dummy copy.
Well, hello there. Welcome back to Dummy Copy, a book show where we talk about books. Hey, you're Claire.
Who are you?
I'm Carrie.
Oh, okay.
It's been a minute since we've recorded.
It has been.
In the flow of shows posting and stuff, it has not, but...
And I have, full disclosure, I've been mostly hanging out with people under the age of 5, and so that's why I made that joke about not knowing who you were.
That's okay.
Yeah, I pretended that I was Grandpa.
Oh.
Last night for a long time, and it was a hit.
It was a hit.
It was an absolute hit.
Wait, you're not Grandpa. I can see it.
No,
I can totally see it.
It coaxed our little podcast avatar, Susanna, out of a tantrum for about 3 seconds.
Nice.
So that was I felt proud of myself. So,
yeah, good job. Congrats.
We did just cut a lime with a butter knife, which is really hard.
It is really hard. I don't know if anybody else has dedicated lime knives, but I think we need to get one.
I think we probably should.
We got the rest of the setup.
Yeah.
We got cups. We got ice cube trays. We just need a lime knife now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, so hearing how few things are in that list.
It's really small.
It makes me feel embarrassed for how long it took us to have a, comfortable drinking experience.
Well, I mean, we made it work.
We did make it work.
We made it work.
I never want to drink another warm vodka soda again, though.
No. Honestly, the ice tray was the real game changer here. The cups are nice, too. Otherwise, we'd just be drinking it out of our hands. Our cupped hands just... let's talk about books.
This is a very wet podcast.
Yeah, this is a very wet podcast now. Wet and sticky.
Okay, what are we talking about?
Wet and sticky, yeah. Let's talk about Eliza Clark. We're going to talk about Eliza Clark.
Who has two novels out. One of them is Boy Parts.
Yep.
Penance is coming out next month as you are listening to
September
it.
September 20-something. Yeah. September 20-something. She is a writer from Newcastle. She is one of Granta's, Granta.
I have no idea.
Granta. Sort of like a new writer to watch. She was awarded, a grant.
I think it might even be called New Northern Writers.
Yeah, New Northern Writers.
Yeah.
I think that sounds right.
Yeah.
Which allowed her to work only 4 retail days a week instead of 5, so she could work on Boy Parts, which I identify with. If I had an extra day in the week, man, I could move mountains, probably.
I could cure cancer, at least.
I don't doubt it. And she's just a really fucking good writer.
She is so great at what she does. She's really young too. Mm-hmm. It sounds like, I think Boy Parts came out when she was 26.
Mm-hmm.
And she also, it sounds like she sort of like, she'd said in some podcast that she did her Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours doing fan fiction, which I feel really charmed
by. I love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I will say Boy Parts came out in the UK in 2020. So it only just made its way to the States in May. But
it is so exactly in the Venn diagram of things that Carrie and I were interested in.
It absolutely is.
And it really executed.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Carrie, what is Boy Parts about?
Okay.
I always make you do the synopsis. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. In a nutshell, we're going to do a very brief synopsis and then sort of dive into the meat of it. But in a nutshell, Boy Parts revolves around a character named Irina, who is more or less a fetish photographer. She lives in Northern England, Chair of Beauty. She's compared to Priscilla Presley before she has the work done.
Yeah. One character says, you look like something a little boy drew.
Yeah, yeah.
Like presumably to jack off on, is what I read.
She's 6 feet tall. She's a redhead. She talks about wearing waist trainers. She talks about her whole beauty process.
Yeah.
She's stunning. Like people absolutely respond to her presence just because she's there.
Not only because she is very powerful and sociopathic, which she also is.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. The beauty sort of enables a lot of sociopathic tendencies,
which
as we find
later.
out. But early on in the book, two kind of major things happen. One, she's working at her bartending job and a woman comes in, very irate, sort of interrupts all these weird businessmen being weird to her, to accuse her of taking photos, compromising photos of her underage son, and then punches her in the face. So right off the bat, she gets this 6-week sabbatical for being traumatized at work. In the same first kind of 30 pages, she gets an email from a gallery in London saying, hey, we've seen your work. We really want you to be part of this group show. Will you go back through your archives, send us some things that we can display?
This might be a good moment to talk about what kind of work she does.
Yes.
And so Irina takes photos of men in like feminized positions, essentially. Yes. She likes to take photos of men who are not... conventionally masculine. Yeah,
she has kind of no interest in men who are conventionally handsome or masculine.
I'm a broad church. So she takes men who we would think about as maybe ugly, mm-hmm. and also of men who are sort of feminine looking. Mm-hmm. She'll put them in lingerie. She'll put them in lipstick. She'll put them in positions where she is yanking their body parts around. So it is fetish art.
Yes. Kind of the device of the novel, we sort of get an insight into who this more or less art monster, as we come to find out, is. Through her kind of going back through her archives, beginning at the start of her sort of college career, university career, and up until now. The very short and slim of it is kind of that's the structure of the novel. But oh man,
there's
Irina so much more.
Is very depraved.
She is. She's and depraved. She's a total sociopath.
Oh, and she does very bad things.
She does very bad things. There aren't a ton of reviews, actually, but the things I've seen, there have been a lot of people compare her to Otessa Moshfegh, particularly My Year of Rest and Relaxation.
Yeah, that feels apt to me.
Yeah, and a lot of people talk about American Psycho when they're talking about boy parts.
Yeah, which... makes me feel like, I don't know, I've actually, full confession, I feel like I have lately been feeling like I have been being too harsh about American Psycho.
Yeah, yeah. There are a lot of things that have been coming out that I am interested in that people are like, oh, it's like America, blah, blah. Yeah. And which, I mean, things get compared to things all the time.
No, they
and
do.
Often it doesn't mean anything.
I also feel like it was probably the right novel for the right time. Yeah. I don't know. I bet it's still probably too long. I feel like maybe I was like doing
Bret Easton Ellis is still a chooch.
Oh my God. Yes, he's terrible.
But it might be time to revisit.
I might be. I only read it once.
Maybe we should do a show about it.
Maybe.
On the next episode of Dummy Coffee, we begrudgingly read American Psycho.
Which I think I literally dragged for a full 5 minutes in the very first episode we did, even though I only read it once. I'm feeling a little sheepish about it, listeners.
Yeah.
Terry.
Someday.
Yeah.
Someday we'll go back. But for now...
We're talking about boy parts.
We have many, many thoughts.
We have many, many thoughts.
We had like a 2-hour debrief about this because we couldn't stop talking about it to each other.
So I think what we're going to do today is we are going to talk about what Carrie... I'm looking at Carrie like she's going to give me permission, but we already talked about it for 2 hours.
Absolutely.
So we are going to talk about three, roughly, of the most prevalent things in boy parts.
Yeah.
And so maybe now is a good time to take a little break.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Oh.
So we identified three main themes that run throughout the entirety of the book and are really like pretty tightly braided together. And they are beauty, gender, and power. And we might as well start with beauty because it's like pretty much like right off the bat.
Yeah. I mean, and she says, I think it is even in the first 5 pages I read. Irina says, people tend to equate beauty with goodness.
Yes.
Which I think is absolutely true. Mm-hmm. And it ends up being sort of feeding into other things that we will talk about later, about how Irina kind of skates on a lot of bad behavior because people don't expect particularly... Yeah. I mean, they expect beautiful women to be, like, sneaky, maybe. Mm-hmm. But they don't expect to sneak like beautiful women to be powerful.
Yeah, powerful, yeah. and to be powerful, to know that they're powerful, and then to wield that power for evil.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I think that's kind of part of it. I've listened to a couple of interviews with Eliza Clark, and she talks about, one, how this book was a little bit inspired by the book Tampa by Alyssa Nutting, which we, Claire and I, have had extensive conversations about.
We
this
have
book.
Probably spent at least yeah. 6 hours
so
on our
much
lives
time talking about this book.
And I actually come on the side of thinking that that book didn't do. That book didn't do the things that this book is doing.
I think Eliza Clark read that book and then went, oh, I got this.
Yeah.
And then, like,
yeah.
did the thing.
Hold my beer. Alyssa Nutting.
Yeah.
So Tampa is about a super hot woman mm-hmm. who is a pedophile.
Yes.
Becomes a junior high teacher so that she can prey on 12-year-old boys.
Yeah, which is yicky. It's a yicky book.
No, it's so yicky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm done.
We're not talking about Tampa, but yeah, like a lot of that book hinges on that same idea of like beauty equals virtue, and it does not. I've also heard Eliza Clark talk a lot about the fact that so many books talk about beautiful women, and they never talk about what it takes to be a beautiful woman.
Yeah, so Irina is waist training. Irina obviously has an eating disorder.
Yep.
Irina always has a full piece of makeup. She hates being quote-unquote dressed down, she talks about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
She talks a lot about, like, workout regimens, doing yoga and Pilates, and how many push-ups she does every
Which
day.
Which also makes her very strong.
She's very strong, So she's 6 foot tall. She's a redhead. People compare her to young Priscilla Presley. One man in particular who is a plastic surgeon says Priscilla Presley, but before she had all that terrible work done.
One of the two men that rape Irina in this book.
Yeah, geez.
Yeah.
that we see on screen.
Yeah.
Just this idea that, like, because she's beautiful, she's always sort of undermined. I feel like these men in her orbit don't take her super seriously or don't recognize the power that she wields.
No, totally. And so it sort of works both ways. So Eddie from Tesco, early on in the book, we meet this man, Eddie from Tesco, mm-hmm. which is what she calls him to his face and otherwise, who is a...
One of the men, so she scouts men, kind of on the street.
She has business cards that she hands out, and she has a whole spiel. She says, I am a photographer. This is the kind of art I do.
Yeah, here's my website. Check it out. If you're interested, email me, and we'll set something up.
Yeah.
And they always do, because she's hot.
Yeah.
Because she's hot. Eddie from Tesco is one of the sort of main tertiary characters in the book. Mm-hmm. One of two. So she gets involved with Eddie, who's this, like,
he's just very sweet. He seems very young. He's really into manga. He seems very childlike compared to Irina.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Eddie, I feel like, is this a moment where we can talk about Eddie's being groomed, probably?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Eddie was, when he was a young man, who had an inappropriate sexual relationship with an older man mm-hmm. that he's obviously very traumatized by.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there are other reasons why I think that Eddie sort of gloms onto Irina, but I think one of them is that he sort of can't believe his luck.
Right, yeah. And I think that kind of is a theme, and I think that's part of why these men who are average to unattractive, that's why she's able to sort of prey on them, is because they're taken aback by this really stunningly beautiful woman who is taking an interest in them, and they kind of can't, like, wrap their head around the fact that, why is she really, like, she thinks I'm, and honestly, it's kind of weird. It does feel gender role reversey, because you hear about that with, like, photographers in particular.
Yeah.
Like, I know photographers in town, who,
and that's even part of her art.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, it's like she is subverting the male gaze.
Yeah.
Like She even says, she talks about, I wonder if I can find my notes. She talks about Pasolini, not that I know anything about Pasolini, but she talks about being really inspired by Pasolini and seeing his films. Mm-hmm. And I wish I could find, I think I wrote it down. but talking about how she saw Pasolini and went, oh, I can look at a man the way that men look at me.
Yeah. But it's really interesting. Yeah. And it is really interesting to, I mean, we talked about, you know, at the very beginning, she gets punched in the face by this woman at the bar that she works at.
Yeah.
And like the way men sort of react to it, she has a bruise that she's trying to cover up, but it's there enough that you can't fully cover it up. And all these men who she's basically like taking advantage of and putting into these weird compromising positions, but they still have this weird like machismo moment where they're like, oh, did a man do that to you? Yeah. I can. And she even says at one point, like, what are you going to do? You know, like, what are you going to do about it, really? You know,
which I feel like is great self-awareness, because the flip side of the beauty is that it also makes her a target.
Yeah.
Like, which we also see. I mean, not that predators are predators, not that her looking a certain way made this happen, but when she was in high school, her 40-year-old teacher, she started having sex with her 40-year-old teacher, which Irina felt allegedly, because mostly, that's a really charming thing, that is not a charming thing about this book. This is a compelling thing about this book.
Yes.
Is that we're very much living in Irina's head.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, there's
she is the narrator.
Yeah.
And she is very much an unreliable narrator.
Yeah, she really is. And so she says, at one point, I think she says to Eddie, when they're sort of comparing their experiences of, you know, like being past molested. Trauma.
Yeah, yeah.
She says, oh, it's not a big deal. I quite liked it or something. Right. Doesn't she say that?
Yeah, and like at another point, as she's going through her files, she's talking about how, like, and it's really interesting because she's talking, like, I feel like Eliza Clark does this really well, the unreliable narrator thing, and the device of going through the archives is really effective, because she's saying one thing, but then she's describing her work, and the work is reflecting something different than what she's saying about how she feels about her life at the time.
Yeah.
So, like, as she's having this weird affair with this teacher who's, you know, she's 17, he's 42 or whatever, and her work goes from, like, doing, like pencil drawings of Galadriel from Lord of the Rings to, like, being all, like dicks and cum and pubes and stuff, you know? And it's like, no, obviously, as she's saying, the only embarrassing thing about that, the only damaging thing about that is when it came out, everyone looked at me as the girl who got raped or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, obviously, like, it's doing something internally that you have just sort of shut out, you know? Yeah. So, like, yeah, the unreliable narrator thing is, like, is so well done here. Because you're existing in her brain the whole time.
No, the whole time. And I mean, and it does, and she is so bad.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and spoiler alert, I think we are a spoilers podcast.
We are a spoilers podcast. Spoilers are coming. If you haven't read it, pause it now, read it, come back,
we'll chat. If you care about it.
If you care, I don't think it spoils anything.
I don't think so either.
No.
Yeah. Okay, so at one point, and it's debatable, but because she has these kind of drug and alcohol induced breaks with reality periodically, but it becomes apparent that she murdered somebody.
Yeah. And kind of like just murder him. She brings a guy home that she finds on a fucking bus stop bench at 3 a.m.
Transient, very young man.
Brings him home. Shit goes awry. He attacks her. She ends up killing him.
Yeah.
And disposing of his body in a,
cutting it up in a scene that I didn't want to read while I was eating my lunch.
Cutting
one
him
day.
Up, going out to the moors and disposing of his body parts
then
in
killing
different
her
places
cat
in the process. Yeah. No, it gets bad. It gets dark.
It's so bad. And so, I mean, it becomes a question of, like, and I think this is an idea that Eliza Clark explores in both of her books that I really appreciate. Like, obviously, culturally, we know hurt people hurt people.
Mm-hmm.
But is Irina just like, was Irina just going to be like that?
Right. Well, like, at what point? I mean, that's like, and I do. It is in both books. Like, that idea of, like, how much of it is internal and how much of it is external. And, like, what? Because, I mean, even aside from, I'll say, like, that murder scene, she's not unjustified. She doesn't just bring a guy home and fucking murder him. You know, like, shit happens.
I mean, she's attacking her. She manipulates him into taking his clothes off.
She does,
like,
yeah.
Does she's, all of I mean, this other, yes. like, predatory yeah. shit.
But it is, like...
But he does lunge at her, and he attacks
her. He's smashing her head into the... Like, punching her and stuff. Yeah, like, it's a bad scene.
Yeah.
Divorced, like, if you take that out of it, though, she does a lot of really horrible things that are not prompted. Like, I mean, she takes...
her treatment of Flo.
Her treatment of Flo, her treatment of Eddie, her treatment of... Basically, I mean, like, you get the sense that at a certain point, her art, her photography, takes a turn that is just sort of designed to enable her to abuse people.
Oh, no, totally. I mean, and there's even a moment, it sounds like a critique she got in her master's program when she was doing a series about taking random men home, and the prompt was, what would you do to be my boyfriend? And so she makes them do sort of disgusting things.
Yeah.
And she films it. One of her teachers says, this isn't art, it's pornography.
Yeah.
And I actually think, I think her art still that she is getting gallery shows for and selling for a lot of money.
Yeah.
I think it's still pornography for her.
Yeah, but it becomes art because she's this impossibly beautiful woman doing it.
Yeah. So it's like making things interesting and like subverting gender roles in this way.
Yeah. And I think the beauty thing very much feeds into the power thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Very much.
No, I mean, and so, and I think it's also like this is a moment where we can sort of note that Northern England is more working class.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So she goes to London and she's regarded as kind of a hick.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
that's like when she goes to school and then later on also when she's in the gallery setting.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I think I was talking to you before we recorded. The only scene I was worried about spoiling was this amazing reveal.
Oh my gosh.
It's so well done. Yeah. So the whole time she's making crazy money on private sales.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like she's got this Mr. B. Mr. B. Who she doesn't know who he is really.
And he's really sketchy. He wants the photos that have blood.
Yeah, he wants the worst shit she can produce, basically. Yeah. And so anytime
he wants the pornography.
Yeah. But it's like torture porn is what he wants.
He wants torture porn.
And that is kind of what she's more or less what she's doing. But yeah, so she goes to school in London, kind of can't hack it, bails.
Yeah.
And then there's just like, London's so blah. You know, like...
Well, no, and I read it twice, and it also sounds like she only got into one school in London.
Yeah. So there are questions. Again, unreliable narrator. Yeah. We're seeing all of this through the lens of Irina, you know, but like... There's an outside world observing it. Yeah. But the sort of final gallery show crescendo.
Oh, right. So she's so excited. She gets there and she's like, oh, I hate being in London. Everybody just wears sneakers and jeans and they think you're so provincial if you're wearing heels and a full face of makeup like she always is. And then it becomes apparent that one of her friends from art school got her this show.
Yeah. Which she didn't know
at
the time.
Which she has an absolute amount. Yeah, there's like she says, my eyes felt wet.
Mm-hmm.
I know. and then the person who booked the show, her friend who has been more successful, is like, oh, that girl, oh, they just took her training wheels off, meaning the person who was in charge of the show at the gallery. Yeah. So, and then she goes to the show and she's like wearing this like wild outfit that she bought at a lingerie store, and she's wasted, and she keeps handing out business cards, which everybody thinks is like really provincial and dumb. Yeah. Like, she is kind of a laughing stock.
She is, which she sort of refuses to see herself.
No, because she's, I mean, and I almost feel like we said, I almost wish we'd left the reveal for that, because she exerts so much power over everybody around her.
Everybody. So, when she's at home, at home in Northern England, she's rich. She's got more money than anyone else. She does have this, like, I have all of these, like, private sale things. Yeah. You know, like, there's this certain level. Her only friend is a woman named Flo, who she met during art school, who is... Flo is obsessed with Irina. Yeah. Like, weirdly, they sort of had a fling over the summer. Flo is a rebound for her, which it sucks. She totally took advantage of her poor friend.
Yeah, the first time we meet Flo, she is vacuuming Irina's apartment and offering to buy her food because she's hungover.
Right, like, right. I mean, she is just, like, devoted. And, oh my God, I lost my train of thought. But yeah, no, she's like a very much a big fish in a small pond.
Oh, totally. I mean, in the way that she can just kind of muscle all these men around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's interesting. But she, I mean, there is like, you can, it feels like she says it expressly, but it does really truly feel like she's just doing all these things to see what, at what point someone will stop her. Like,
no.
At what point will somebody say, hey, fuck you, know, like.
Can I read the whole, actually, we probably need a little context. Okay. At the Hackney Space show, she shows a video of her last photo shoot with Eddie.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie, who after this incident sends her these long emails, shows up at her door.
Yeah.
Is like still.
She basically just demolishes his psyche, like with all of these weird,
I mean, and so her last photo shoot with Eddie, she rapes him with a wine bottle,
and it's on camera,
video. Then she shows it,
at
this Hackney Space show, and it is really interesting the way that she and Eddie end up being kind of mirror images of each other. Like Eddie was hurt in this way, and he becomes sort of more pliant and more accepting of people being horrible to him. And Irina's like, no, I don't ever want to get fucked over again.
Irina's obsessed with power, and Eddie is cowed by it.
Yeah, and Irina does all of these horrible things to all of these people, and she says that I'm just going to read the whole thing because it's going to do a better job explaining it than it is. I wonder what the fuck I have to do for people to recognize me as a threat, you know? It's like, am I even doing this shit? Have I even fucking done anything? Like, do I have to snap the wine bottle inside of him to get him to stop sending me sad emails? Do I have to cut his nipple off, talking about somebody else later on in the book, for him to realize he should probably ring the police? Do I have to cave his head in with my camera rather than hit him the once? Oh, that's another guy.
Yep.
Do I have to crash his car? Oh, another guy.
Yeah.
Do I have to smash the glass over the head of every single man I come into contact with just so I leave a fucking mark?
Yeah.
And it is. She has this shield, but then it's also the thing that makes her vulnerable, right?
Yeah. Like, no, it is a really sort of wild exploration of gender and beauty and power dynamics. Yeah. Like, it is just, like, so insane. It really is.
Yeah.
And it's like, and so we've talked about, not to deviate too much, we've talked about all this kind of dark shit. This book is fucking funny.
It is really funny. Yeah. It turns out as a teen, Irina was obsessed with Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings, there are so many.
Which she still really earnestly loves.
Yes, and there are these moments where it just sort of comes out in, like, weird. So there's this really great, so you and I both have read many, many books that talk about many, many sort of, like, drug-fueled party whatever moments.
Yeah.
And I feel like Clark just, like, nails it. There's this scene where they're all going out. Is it? I don't remember why.
Oh, it's because she got the show.
Yes. Yeah. It's to celebrate getting the show.
Yeah.
So she and Flo and their friend Finch are getting ready. They go out. They're, like, taking an inventory of all the drugs that they have, you know, and, like, who wants to do what or whatever. What should we bring? And it's just this, like, really great, like, they go out to this bar and they go out to another bar. And she's talking about, like, how fucking white this bar is, and they're all dancing to these things, and it's just like, it's just embarrassing. And she's like going into the bathroom and doing bumps of coke and like coming back and whatever. And like the culmination of it, they're in this Uber and something happens where Finch sort of like does this dig about like, oh, like makes a joke about, there's some joke. She's got a poster of like Aragorn or something in her dorm room at college. And then he makes some joke about like, oh, yeah, whatever, just because you want to be Mrs. Frodo Baggins. Yeah. And she just, like, launches into this, like, 100% nerd tirade about, like,
yeah,
like, just all this weird Lord of the Rings shit all of a sudden.
Oh, it's, I,
like,
know. Yeah. It does feel really idiosyncratic because she is so in control.
Yeah.
But then the whole last half of the book is her losing control, right?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. It's like, just, she, like, this, it's, yeah, like, the beginning of the spiral is when her persona cracks and she, like,
no, I do love Lord of the Rings.
Cuts into, shut somebody up, about Lord of the Rings. Yeah, yeah, it's just so funny. Yeah, no, it's just,
it,
like,
it is really funny.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I love that. There's that one, what is that? There's that one line about, I don't know. I don't, we, oh, haven't even gotten, like, into my, her mother yet.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, my adolescence is.
Yeah, yeah. Where is the, hang on. Jesus, self-harm, and Lord of the Rings. My tween years crash back to me in waves. And it's just like these moments where, oh my God, like, Eliza Clark is so good at, like, weird black humor shit in this. Yeah. Like, there are these moments where something pivotal happens. Irina has done something. She's taken an Uber home. And there's, like, this, like, weird internal dialogue moment where she's, like, dissecting, like, why am I doing this? Is anyone ever, like, what is consent anyway? And how do we even know what we like? Because blah, 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 all these outside, yada, yeah, yada, yada. And then she just slides in this line that's, like, and after I finish telling the Uber driver, yeah, this, he asks if I'm okay. And it's, like, Jesus.
No, it's so well done.
It's so funny. It's just so good.
Yeah.
And it's so, it's just, yeah, that, like, it's, like, pitch perfect combination of, like, really, really dark, heavy shit, and then just these moments where you're like, oh my God, this total sociopath is, like, hysterically funny, you know? Like,
yeah, or she's like, this terrible sociopath is hysterically funny and is also, like, hurt. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. She's not, it's not, like, a simple villain, you know? Like, there are so many elements, like, you see these insights into, like, you know, again, like, the thing with her teacher when she's 17, and then the only relationship that seems like it was kind of, like, healthy and normal, and how that crashes and burns, and then, like, shit with her mother, who is a fucking, oh my gosh, stone cold bitch.
Crazy.
Yeah, her mom sucks, and her dad is, like,
wrapped,
like,
around her little,
yeah,
finger.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and, like, the stuff with Flo, and I think this is interesting, and this is almost like a precursor to what she does in Penance, but there are these little moments where, like, Flo, her friend Flo, has a blog, and she doesn't know that Irina knows about it, but Irina reads it. And so Irina will, like, sort of needle Flo, mm-hmm, and manipulate her, and then we'll wait a minute and then go check the blog. And then Flo will have, like, we'll get these, like, chunks of sort of Flo's,
yeah,
perspective,
which is,
on,
like,
things,
really, yeah, which is, like, really earnest.
Yeah,
I very mean, earnest. And I mean, also really self-aware, but also, like, I mean, if you've ever talked to your friend who has a horrible boyfriend or girlfriend, yeah, but it's been gendered in my,
yeah,
life.
Yeah,
yeah, but it's like, nobody doesn't mean it.
Yeah,
he's so damaged.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. And Irina's just like,
yeah,
yeah.
Well, and it's so funny. So Irina will do things to Flo. Wait until a blog post comes up, read it, and then we'll, like, continue to manipulate Flo based on what she's written in this blog post. It's so fucking, it's just so shitty, you know? Like, she's such a shitty person. She really is just an asshole. Like, I feel like Irina is an asshole, but she's such a compelling asshole.
Oh, she really is. So the second of Eliza Clark's book we're talking about, it's coming out in September. Carrie, mm-hmm, thinks it's the 23rd, and Carrie is my fearless leader, so I believe everything she says without question.
September 20-something.
Something. Yeah. Yes. So Penance, and I will give absolutely a one-sentence synopsis, is about three high school girls who are interested in true crime and the occult, who murder one of their classmates. Okay, it's going to be a two-sentence synopsis.
That's fine.
But the device of the book is that a true crime novelist named Alec Corelli, is essentially, the book is presented as Alec Corelli's book about the crime. Yes. And Alec Corelli, after the book was published, was pilloried in the press, mm-hmm, for misrepresenting interviews. And generally just, like, being, yeah, a craven, gross piece of shit around, right, this crime.
Yes. And Alec Corelli had before this, sort of had a, I don't remember the exact context, but he had written something, had been sort of disgraced for it, had sort of flown under the radar, and then sort of dredges this story of, like, the salacious teen girl murder story.
He finds out about it via clickbait.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he had it's almost 10 years later.
It's almost 10 years later. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he had a successful career as a true crime novelist. Mm-hmm. And then the scandal around his phone tapping, which mm-hmm. actually happened in the UK,
yeah.
which was sounded gross and disgusting, kind of tanked his next two books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the intermediary, his daughter committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And now, so we are reading this account as he is relaying it.
Yes. And so he's kind of relaying it now. Like, yeah. the novel basically takes place. So yeah, it's a novel about a true crime journalist writing a true account about. So yeah, so it's like layers.
There are layers.
Yeah. But yeah. It's a fiction book. None of this is true.
None of this is true.
But it is presented very much in the style of true crime writing that has become very popular.
Yeah, and then I think that the structure is part of the genius of this book little bit. So mm-hmm. the book is structured as the journalist is thinking about four of the key players, which mm-hmm. are four high school girls.
Yep.
And this is the thing he seemed to get the most flack with in the middle of him describing interviews with families and with sort of context about the town. He's also narrativizing mm-hmm. big chunks of the time around the crime,
yes.
which is amazing mm-hmm. because it allows it to feel like a novel and yes. then also provides an excellent critique of the true crime industrial complex.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. very compelling, very, very different from Boy Parts, but also has a lot of, I feel like there are some threads.
There are absolutely some common threads.
But yeah, it's really interesting. So it's kind of set up, it's like a series, the sections sort of each focus on a different player in this sort of saga of the murder of Joni. Joni is the name of the girl who is killed.
Yeah.
And it feels very sort of timely because it has like this journalist is going around interviewing people who are actually part of it, but then there are also like Tumblr posts and like Reddit threads, and there are like all of these. It's not exactly epistolary, but kind of like
it feels like that.
Yeah.
I mean, particularly because the other thing he got in trouble for when people were taking him to task for being a craven true crime journalist mm-hmm. is he is claiming that he has a correspondence with the murderers who are now in jail, where really he just somehow obtained their therapeutic writing. So right. you hear a lot of this account in these girls' mm-hmm. own voices.
Yeah.
And so the girls range from about 15 to 17, maybe mm-hmm. even younger. Mm-hmm. Angelica might be 14.
Mm-hmm.
Their names are Angelica, mm-hmm. Violet. He focuses on Jade, who was not actually involved in the crime,
mm-hmm.
and then another woman named Dolly. So Angelica is kind of Angelica is vapid. She mm-hmm. is the richest girl in a poor town.
Mm-hmm.
Her dad is like kind of a local talking head in politics.
Yeah.
He's a Brexiter. He's very white ring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Violet is somebody who got bullied a lot as a child and sort of retreats into true crime fandom via mm-hmm. Tumblr.
Yes. Yep. She's very kind of creepypasta girl.
Yeah. But also is just trying to be invisible because she was bullied so much in her mm-hmm. life. And then Dolly moves to town.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of at the end of the novel and is just had bad things happen to her past and is just genuinely insane.
Yeah. Yes.
So I think what we want to do is take you through the chronology a little bit. So it opens up, all of these girls live in a town in the north of England called Crow-on-the-Sea,
mm-hmm.
which in itself is an amazing setting because it's pretty creepy.
It is a creepy setting.
Yeah.
So it's like this, it's this town that at one point in the past was like a tourist town, sort of a tourist beach town. So there's like There are these grand sort of hotels, and there are these like tourist things. There's a water park. There's an amusement park. Yeah. You know, like the things that, like, if you're going on holiday in England, you're going to go to Crow-on-Sea.
Yeah, which is also in itself an interesting dynamic. And so they talk about how when people were going to go on vacation in England before air travel was really accessible, they'd go to the seaside. Yeah. And then as people started to go to abroad, Crow-on-Sea started to suffer. So they get these like really tacky amusement parks, this really tacky water park. Like, it is a town in decline.
Yeah. It's this like this sort of slow decline, like incremental, like, oh no. And then, like, as it stands, like at the time of the crime or whatever, the train has stopped going to Crow-on-Sea. There are still all these little like beachy cabins or whatever, but they're like largely vacant, you know, like, and there's a very clear sort of class distinction in this town. Yeah,
but they're all sort of thrust together because now the rich people aren't like as rich as they were. And so they're sort of mixed with the poor people, and that ends up being important. I mean, and also, like, just, I mean, so many things about Crow-on-Sea feel kind of spooky. Like, there were a lot of killings of witches in the 18th century. The seagulls are very predatory.
Yeah.
At one point in the novel, it becomes apparent that there was a string of donkey stranglings.
Right, right. There's like, it's just a town where it's like ripe for like urban legendary. You know, like, so many things have happened that are legitimate, and then so many things have sort of spiraled off of these legitimate happenings that are maybe not necessarily like super ground in reality, but like, it's still like people take things and run with them. And I feel like, that's like, this town is very sort of just like, oh, anything could happen, all kinds of, and then there are like legitimate like social scandals that happen there. Like, there's a
Angelica, one of the Angelica, who is these, she's pretty vapid. She feels like an empty vessel, even as a young child. Her father, who is the talking head for like right wing politics, he's like best friends with a pedophile, and that like rocks the town.
And there's like a there's an incident at a water park where a girl gets, so there's this like this water park that has all of these really questionable attractions that are not safe, have not been like approved by anybody. It's just like they're trying to be like the biggest and the best and the weirdest. And so like there's this part where like a girl gets stuck in a slide face down and drowns, and then another girl just like knocks her corpse out of the slide. Like, there are all of these things, these like weird, creepy, sad, tragic things happening in this town. So
all the time. And that might be a good place to take us into sort of our first scene, is when all of our main characters are children. So the girl who drowns in the slide is Angelica, the vapid Brexity dad person, Angelica's best friend. And so she knocks, and so
Violet is the one who is
one of her murderers, knocks into her in the slide and knocks her into the pool where Joni Wilson, the eventual murder victim, sees.
Yeah.
And so Joni Wilson enters primary school, where Angelica, the dead girl, and then another girl who still lives, whose name I can't remember. But I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But she, they are very much just mean little girls. They lock people in the toilet cubicle.
Yeah.
Violet is very sensitive to being bullied. She's very, very bright.
Yeah.
And so, she's, her mom described it.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, opening, it's like Joni and Violet are best friends and bullied girls in like primary school.
Yeah, so we're talking about like 7 year olds,
and
probably, right?
Angelica and these two other girls are the ones that bully them mercilessly when they're young. And they're like really into all kinds of like little girl things. And Angelica and her cohort are not interested in these little girl things. They zero in on sort of like the quote unquote weaker girls and just like go for blood. And then all of a sudden, time goes on, whatever. They move sort of more into high school realm, and Joni meets up with a gal named Lauren, who is the like nice popular girl, and takes Lauren takes Joni under her wing. Over the span of a summer, Joni goes from being this like weird nerd dork girl to being like a cool, popular, pretty girl.
Totally leaving Violet behind, her former best friend. And this is very familiar to anybody who has ever been a young girl.
That's like, I feel like this book is really, really good at sort of portraying the politics of young girldom. Because like, they're complicated and weird, you know? And it is like, the span of a summer is an eternity when you're a little kid. And 3 months is like, a whole lot can happen in 3 months. You leave the school being a nerd who's bullied all the time, and you come back being a pretty popular girl. And why does that happen? I don't know, but it does. And it happens here. And it sort of throws the balance of the schoolgirls in this town. It just throws it off the rails, you know? Like, all of a sudden, Joni's pretty. People realize Joni's really funny. And she just like gets folded into the popular girl clique and leaves her friend Violet in the dust.
So Violet is sad and tries to make herself invisible so that nobody will pick on her. Meanwhile, Angelica, who is the most hated member of this clique, and this is maybe the best part, is Angelica is sort of obsessed with this hierarchy of girls, and she always like, she will always like tell Joni to her face that she's like a B-tier popular girl. But throws Angelica off too, and so Angelica and Violet both start to hate Joni for different reasons.
Violet hates Joni because she's been left behind. Doesn't even hate her, but resents her. I think she resents her.
And Angelica is really mean to Joni, and so Violet, who is like, becoming very interested in very like edgy true crime fandoms, like she like brushes up against school shooters stands.
It's like weird local folklore and like weird, I mean, it's not, so we all like the whole Slender Man thing that happened, right? Like, she's sort of like tied into that corner of the 2010s internet where people are positing these like weird sort of theses about bullshit that's like not founded in anything real, but like she kind of gets like, she just sort of gets obsessed with these like these weird corners of the internet that like talk about things that may or may not have happened in the community.
And she seems to really find comfort in it. I mean, and this is maybe a good moment to talk about like a significant event in Joni's life was that she, when she was 10, got raped by a teenage boy who was teaching her swimming lessons. And it, you can, like, see that sort of darkness replicating. Like, she is a fan of The Sims, and so she kind of creates, like, a murder torture dungeon in her Sims
Violet thing. Does.
Violet does. Oh, sorry. Violet, not Joni. Yeah. Not Joni.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's really interesting. Yeah, I think what's so interesting about this book is, like, it really is sort of tracing almost like a, it's like the trajectory of like, of these young girls' lives, you know, and like on all of the sort of like everyday traumas that so many girls have to deal with that people, and I think it's definitely better now, but I do think there have been moments in the past where like girls have to deal with all of this fucked up shit and people are just like, you know, like, it just gets sort of, like, swept under the rug. It's hard to deal with, and so we're not going to deal with it.
No, I mean, and I think it does, like, it does a great job sort of, like, addressing or taking serious, like, real adolescent trauma. So all of, like, these really fucked up girls, they end up murdering somebody. And it, I mean, and it's a little bit like Irina. Like, is that what it takes? Like, yeah, is like, that what it takes?
Is that what it takes for to, you to, like, recognize
somebody's pain?
The shit that I've had to deal with. Like, and it is, it's so, it's really interesting in that way because you kind of go into it. It's funny because it opens and it's like, oh, this poor girl, Joni, was abused by these villains, you know? And then as it delves kind of deeper, it's like, well, yes, like she didn't deserve what she got by any means. But also it's not as simple as like these three mean girls fucked up this nice girl. You know, like,
and Carrie and I were talking about this earlier. It feels like it maybe would have been a good, it could have been a good novel if it was like merely like pillaring this Alec Corelli for being like a craven true crime journalist. Yeah. It could have been a good novel if it was just about girls being mean.
Yeah.
But it also explores the idea of hurt people.
Right. Yeah.
Which
yeah.
I feel like brings us to Dolly.
Yeah. So Dolly.
Dolly.
So Dolly feels to me like the instigator mostly.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there are all these girls dealing with all these things, personal and then just like school shit. You know, the school shit that everyone's like, well, it's kids being kids. Everyone, boys, blah, 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 blah.
People are mean to each other.
Yeah, it's fine. They just got to work it out. But then, so it's like, it's kind of like, it's typical girls being mean to each other in school narrative. And then this Dolly figure comes in, and Dolly's a little bit older.
Beautiful.
Very beautiful. Total sociopath.
Yeah.
Certain common threads. And yeah, she sort of comes in. People are really intrigued by her because she's pretty and she's sexual and she does, you know, she's an interesting figure. But then, like, little by little, she's taken into sort of the popular crowd. And then she, like, fucks it all up. She, like, gets in fights. She's, like, sleeping with other people's boyfriends.
She bites people.
Yeah. Yeah. And so she gets, like, shoved out. She's, like, immediately taken in by the popular people. And then, like, very quickly just, like, jammed out of there.
Yeah, they're like with Angelica and Violet,
right,
who are the rejects.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But she's sort of, like, queen of the rejects because she has this extraordinarily strong personality. Yeah. And she's very good at talking people into doing the things that she wants them to do. Mm-hmm. And as we come to learn, she has a real shitty history, too.
Yeah.
You know, again, like, all of these girls, the three girls that do the terrible thing all have reasons why they became kind of terrible, you know? And so it starts with this sort of black and white thing, and then it sort of just, like, spirals out into, like, oh my gosh, all of these people are so fucking damaged, you know?
Yeah.
And nobody stepped in at any point to try to save them.
I mean, we talk about complicating things. Mm-hmm. This is what this book does.
Yeah.
I mean, and then also if you think about, like, so, I mean, Dolly's a little older, by which I mean she's 17.
Right. Like, not that old.
And so they're, I mean, these are children.
Yeah.
Like, and so they're the whole book, they're drinking, they're mm-hmm. thinking and talking about sex.
Yep.
Or at least, like, sort of heterosexual beauty norms, which mm-hmm. I feel like are sort of, like, you cannot disentangle them from that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and they're also all really obsessed with the occult.
Yeah.
And, like...
Yeah, especially these three. And it is really interesting how, yeah. I mean, like, 2010's internet was a weird place. And... I feel like people, kids in particular, who didn't feel like they fit in anywhere else could find all these weird little niche moments in 2010's internet where they're like, oh no, these people get my pain. These people get where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's really easy when you are vulnerable, when you've dealt with a lot of trauma, and then suddenly you find these, like, weird little niche corners of the internet where people are like, no, 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 no. That's, the things you're feeling are fine. And also, here, let's go crazy with it. Like, mm-hmm. let's get extreme with it. And, like, these three girls who do these really, this fucking unimaginably, it's like, it's so violent and so terrible. But, like, piece by piece, you kind of start to, like, I don't know. You start to sympathize with, like, oh shit, you couldn't find anybody else who would accept
you
here.
Absolutely.
You know,
and
like.
And you see the moment, like, so Dolly is really into, she is a fan of these two school shooters mm-hmm. in Montana that I think are fictional.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't Google it, but.
Yeah.
And she absolutely sort of projects her particular trauma onto one of the school shooters, and she has a psychic connection to him.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and Violet is interesting. Violet just seems lonely.
She's so lonely.
So she sort of gets into, like, local history
mm-hmm.
As a way to sort of, like, just sort of garner popularity as somebody on Tumblr writing about true crime, writing mm-hmm. about, like, witches, the witch trials in their town.
Yeah.
I mean, it just sort of, it does a great job of sort of pointing out that these all of these hurt girls the exact recipe for them torture murdering one of their classmates was the three of them being together. Right.
Yeah. Like the three of them being together and totally, I don't know if unsupervised.
Okay, the parents are totally absent. The
parents are totally absent.
Unless they are abusing their children.
Yeah.
Or being like weird right wing fucks.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, and it's like this is where the moment where Joe, it's just kids being kids, ceases to be an okay excuse because it's like, well, no, like someone has to teach kids how to be not kids. You know, like where are the people who are supposed to be like protecting any of these girls at any point in the story? Yeah. You know, like they're just fucking absent, you know, like.
Well, I mean, maybe except for Violet, like Violet's mom is a social worker.
Yes.
And Violet's mom, like Violet's mom is like trying to keep tabs on her, but like she's just like not. I think the one thing that this book addresses really well is that it's just traumatic to be that age.
Yeah, it is.
Like, you know,
yeah.
Violet's mom, like, takes her computer cord at night so she doesn't spend too much time on the internet. She doesn't stay up late all night. Violet's mom recognizes when she was molested. Violet's mom. Like, she, but there's still nothing she can do.
Right.
Well, but I also agree with you. They are rampaging around drunk all the time.
All the time, yeah. Well, it is like, I don't know. It's like this weird, I don't know. It just like these girls, like at some point, if someone had intervened somewhere along the line, maybe this huge tragedy could have been averted.
And it does sort of speak to the way that they all invented these realities.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So they murdered Joni because they want to do some kind of an occult, I mean, that's not why, but the sort of like the theory is that they will create some sort of occult ritual or create a pocket hell.
Dolly, Dolly gets obsessed with this idea of creating a pocket hell.
Because she loves her Polly Pocket so much, which I thought was so chilling. Man,
Dolly, the character of Dolly is like, so Dolly is the flame that sparks off the explosion, right? Yeah. Like Dolly's like, okay, so yeah, there's like this puddle of petrol or whatever, but like Dolly's the one that's just like, hell yeah, and just like,
oh yeah, no, it's totally because like Angelica is like too stupid, right? Mm-hmm. And Violet is too, it's almost like Violet is too smart.
Yeah,
you know,
she's really smart, but she's really like sad and lonely.
Yeah, she's really sad and lonely, like, so she's gonna do whatever Violet tells her to do.
Yeah, it's just like, just. It's like preteen and teen girl politics to the extreme is what this is. But it's like I knew girls like Dolly, you know, like I went to an alternative school for a little bit, you know, like I was kind of a shitty kid and I knew people like that. And like,
but not everybody kills people.
No, not everybody kills people.
Was that the point you were going to make?
No, well, it is. Yeah. Like, it's like, but if you get sort of like the perfect balance of like ostracized people together in a room, like bad shit can happen. Yeah. And it was really fascinating. Like, I think this book is really interesting because it does start with this like really sensational. I feel like this is the thing that like pulls people into true crime things. Like this being sort of a take on true crime. It really, really worked because it opens with the most sensational parts of it. It's like they tortured her for hours and then they lit her on fire and then she dragged herself through the sand of the beach and then died in a hospital. Like, it's like this whole, like, it's the thing that hooks you when you're like watching the, like, you're scrolling through Netflix and then it's like the little, like, this is what happened and you're like, oh shit. But then it expands and expands and expands and it ceases to be this like really cut and dry, like these three girls are evil and this girl was a victim. And it's like,
yeah, I mean, it does a great job. Like, it sort of, I mean, it complicates every moment.
Mm-hmm.
It could just be a mean girl narrative.
Yeah.
It could also just be a critique of true crime. I mean, the other thing is that, like, it opens and ends with the journalist and the journalist's relationship with these horrible facts.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, and like, what, like, he is obviously craven, but he, in his introduction, is, like, critiquing all of these gross true crime podcasts that are experiencing the case.
Yeah, yeah.
And it ends with his interview with a journalist from The Guardian being like, aren't you ashamed of yourself? Yeah. And he's like, no. Yeah. And no. I feel like I'm getting to the emotional truth of it.
Yeah.
And like, honestly, I don't think he was. But
yeah. But it is like, I mean, and I think, honestly, I think both books talk a lot about, like, what is truth and who gets to set the narrative, you know? And I think Boy Parts, you have this, like, single unreliable narrator through the whole thing. And you have to sort of, like, suss out, like, where is she telling the truth and where is she lying? Mm-hmm. And then in Penance, it is still sort of like, well, yeah, but, like, who gets to say what is true about what happens here?
But you also get the whole picture.
You do, yeah. Which it's
Yeah,
and it is, like, this idea of, like, okay, so, I don't know, my impression, and we talked about this a little bit before, I don't feel like the quote-unquote journalist, you know, the main narrator of the whole thing, I don't feel like he went super out of bounds on what he was doing.
I never felt like he was lying.
No.
And I actually think we're, I mean, I say that like I'm having a feeling. I think we are not meant to think that he is lying.
Right. But yeah. I do think it addresses sort of an interesting aspect of this sort of true crime machine that has become so popular recently. And it is like, is it cool to sort of like package human suffering as entertainment? And I mean, there are so many scenes, there are multiple scenes where he has to sort of like persuade people who were directly or indirectly involved into talking about what they think and how they feel. And they sort of reluctantly do it, and they go on record, and he is saying the things that they said, but like, trauma's non-linear. And if you're trying to like deal with really fucked up shit that happened to you, and then someone comes in at some point and says, what do you think about this? And you say, well, I think this. And then like, a year later, a book gets published, and you're like, fuck, you know, like,
I don't think that anymore.
Yeah. I don't feel like you portrayed this correctly, or like, my feelings are so complicated that you sort of simplifying them and like feeding them into this narrative that you're creating fucks me up in a way, you know, and like, yes, I did say that, and yes, I did go on record, but also like, it's kind of yicky still.
Yeah, no, and so you come away feeling like the journalist is a snake, like really snaky and gross.
Yeah.
And you also feel like he's kind of right.
Right. I know. It's complicated. Yeah. It's not like an easy little package of like, oh, and also it turns out he's a hack. You know, it's like, is he? I don't know. Like, and how do you, like, can you ever come, is there ever a point in this situation where three teenage girls torture and burn another teenage girl to death? Is there ever a point where you can like wrap that up into a nice package? I don't think there is. I don't think so. I don't think that's possible. So in summation, I feel like Eliza Clark has a lot of really interesting things to say.
She does. She's saying everything about everything, I feel like. Okay.
No, and it's like, but she's like, honestly, so I am of the opinion that sometimes when people bring a lot of like internet stuff or whatever, you know, like that can get tedious to me. She does that a lot in both books. Like, I feel like it's not as heavy in Boy Parts, but it's there. And then Penance, there are so many like different like weird internet
chat
culture
logs,
things.
Podcast transcripts. Yeah. But she's keeping her eyes on the prize.
She really is.
She knows what she wants us to see.
Yeah.
And what she wants us to see is people's wholeness.
Yes.
Which I think is like keeps it, which if anybody read Tampa, it's like succeeding where Tampa failed.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, like for better or worse, like internet culture is part of the culture now. Like, that is, it is 100% how we live our lives. And I think she, like, harnesses that power in a really effective way. And she's fucking funny.
She is.
She's really funny. Her books are really well-paced. She's worth your time.
I think so.
I think so. I'm excited to see what all she has to offer.
Yep.
I'll pick up what she puts down in the future. I'm into it. Yeah, so that's a dummy copy. You can find us on Instagram at dummy.copy.tpg. And someday we'll have a website, but not yet.
We will soon.
We will. Thanks for listening. Bye.